Here in Colombia, the stage still rattles past red brick buildings with iron shutters and doors. And since the 1850s, locals still gather at the Jack Douglas Saloon to have a drink, swap stories, and listen to music. On this program, we'll talk about this music and the role it has played in maintaining the lifestyle, customs, and traditions of this small, rural community. From Motherlode Community Radio in Sonora, welcome to The Diggins, a living folk music tradition. I'm your host, Dave Allen. Both a California state park and a National Historic Landmark District, the Gold Rush town of Columbia retains its historic character both in its architecture and in the traditions of the people who live there. Columbia is not just a tourist attraction, but a place where people live. So for Columbia, it is not just a matter of preserving buildings, but in keeping the culture of the place alive. Much of Columbia's community life is expressed through music. Gatherings involving music is how people connect to place and to each other. During the 1970s and 80s, the group of musicians that became most associated with the Columbia music culture were members of the band Fiddlesticks. Certainly no band better exemplifies the era. Boisterous, playful, and irreverent, the music perfectly captured the Columbia spirit and way of life. We brought together the three surviving members of the classic Fiddlesticks lineup, Dave Cavanaugh, Cactus Bob Cole, and Chris the Prairie Flower Stevenson. And on this program, we're going to feature excerpts from that conversation. When Cactus Bob suggests describing their street routine as a beginning topic, Dave Cavanaugh quickly launches in, reminiscing about his favorite bits. Prairie Flower begins filling in the gaps. From there, topics range from Dave's first banjo to the first Strawberry Music Festival. We follow them on tour with Randy Sparks and Burl Ives, join them for their appearance on The Gong Show, sing along with Doo Doo Wah and The Yow, to finally return again to the streets of Columbia.
Shall we talk a moment about street routines?
Yeah.
Picture tax $1. Tim Armacost had a sign on the back of his guitar. Well, first of all, if somebody came up with a camera, we'd all strike a pose and smile, and then they'd take a picture, and then he'd flip over his instrument, and it said, picture tax $1 on the back.
Yeah, and sometimes we'd even stop in the middle of a song. If somebody came up with a camera, we'd stop.
Yeah.
And a photo op.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yes.
Got a dollar every time. Well, it's
trying
not just
money.
It's not just street music. It's an entertainment value,
yes.
And people are willing to pay for entertainment. And if you're making them laugh, then they're being entertained.
So, over the years, we have developed and learned from other musicians little tricks to get that money in the case.
Yeah. Yeah, my favorite is Mama Don't Allow.
Sure.
Well, why don't you explain that, Dave?
Well, it's a simple Mama Don't Allow, no music playing around here, and then we would all take solos, and well, everybody else supported them while they stood, you know, took one step forward and showed off their prowess.
Yeah,
and
Mama Don't Allow, no banjo playing.
And then we realized that every time the bass took a solo, the audience would applaud for some reason. They always applaud the string bass solo. Uh-huh. So we would save that one for last.
Right.
And then when they'd applaud, we say, "Mama don't allow no hand clapping around here." And then tell them that it's their big solo, don't screw it up. And we'd stop and we'd let them be the star of clapping. And then, of course, we'd do the "Mama don't allow no money throwing around here."
Yes.
And, of course,
That was a big money grabber for them.
Yeah, money throwing. And so then the last step of that was we'd say, "Oh, I know you people you're embarrassed to come up and put money in the case in front of the band, so we're going to turn around and play." Yeah.
We called that a large crowd syndrome.
Well, yeah, Tim Armacost labeled it. If there were too many people in the crowd, people wouldn't want to come up to the...
Too embarrassed. Too shy to walk up
so
and put money
say,
in the
"Okay,
case.
I know you guys all are embarrassed to put money in while we're watching." So we would turn around and play a chorus of "Mama Don't Allow No Money Throwing Around Here."
Yeah.
And,
with our backs to the audience.
That was something that if there's too many people, you wouldn't make quite as much money because people would just be...
If you put change in the tip case, you got change. But if you put two $1 bills in there, that was the best seed money.
And there was another little bit I remembered. Sometimes, if it was kind of slow around there, we would just freeze into a tableau of staring at the case.
Yeah.
And then if somebody would put a dollar in, we would play one or two notes. And then another dollar, we'd play a little.
Like getting wound up, yeah.
Yeah. And then finally we would play a tune. And it was very charming, and it fetched money.
And it you never really made any money doing it. I mean, you only made enough money to go at the break, go behind us to the Wet Cheer Saloon and buy a shot of whiskey.
Yeah, that was part of the trouble with playing street music, we would play in front of the hard liquor bar and then everybody would take a break, and if we split the money up, we'd have to...
Yeah, of course, we've changed our ways now.
Oh, yeah, we don't drink anymore.
We don't drink any less either. Whore, whore, whore.
When I got to Columbia in the spring of 1973, Bob and I moved in together, and Bob got a job. Dave Cavanaugh, I met him because you got a little job up in Soulsbyville, and
a
you
playing
and
job.
Oh, yeah.
Played music
at a
together.
Spaghetti feed.
Actually,
yeah.
There was string.
Yeah, I was still in high school at that time.
Yeah.
So. But I was playing with Billy Mack and the Wagon Wheels at the Douglas Saloon every Saturday and Sunday. I was... Yeah. What, 16 years old, and they invited me to come sit in, and then they invited me to come sit in every darn weekend I wanted to, and
so that was the summer. Dave was so young, still in high school,
and I was working in the music store.
He was working.
I think that's
right.
How he picked
music.
Me up to play that gig as his guitar player, because he needed a guitar player for that gig.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah.
Yeah,
that was the first
and we'd
summer.
Probably played in parties and stuff, learned.
It's pretty vague, my memory of that era.
Well, yeah, it was, 50 years ago?
Yeah.
Well, in my memory, Bob was playing the bass in the Garden of Delights, and they worked a lot. But mm-hmm. Bob was the bass player. He didn't have a car. We had no car. And that summer, that's the summer you taught me how to frail the banjo. That's when I first started.
Right. Everybody got into playing. The banjo craze hit at the music store.
Dave,
which I think is really
tell
cool.
Tell us how you learned the banjo.
Oh, I'd taken guitar lessons from old Bill Dwyer. He was the high school music teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And he was an old timey musician. I didn't know it at the time when I was
I
in high school.
Heard about this.
Yeah, and he taught me to finger pick the guitar. And my brother was really into bluegrass, Flat and Scruggs and all that. And so he saw me playing the guitar, and he says, "You're playing a guitar like a banjo. Why don't you just get a banjo?" So we got in the car, and we went to Third Street in San Francisco, and hit some thrift stores, and I bought a $20 banjo or something. Anyway, and then I realized that guitar players were a dime a dozen, and banjo players would probably be in more demand. And, you know, since I was going to make my fortune playing music, I would go ahead and put my energy toward the banjo instead.
There's
of
money in banjos, folks. Yeah. You heard it right here.
So then and playing music in the street lends itself to our kind of instruments, because our acoustic instruments are so loud, mm-hmm. that you don't have any microphones,
right.
or anything. So it was a matter of projecting on, you know, out there into the audience, and these are the perfect instruments to do that with. So, and when you sing, you need to be in the right key, because you're going to have to push your voice all the way to
It's very well. It's the old-fashioned way.
Yes, it is.
So. Mm-hmm. Describe the Garden of Delights. Tim Armacost played Frailing Banjo, and Dave Shapiro played some Frailing and some
Clock.
Then we had mm-hmm. John Ramsey, who played really good bluegrass, and so you had an old-timey band with a Frailing Banjo, and Don Ramsey also learned how to play fiddle, played Irish tunes on the fiddle, so mm-hmm. you had that, and Dave Shapiro played mandolin, and Tim Armacost would play mandolin.
Mm-hmm.
And then people switched off, so it had several different voicings.
Right.
And they had a real interesting repertoire.
Yeah, that was one way that the street music kept the people interested, is we were always putting down one instrument and picking up another, and so you never had the same sound over and over.
That's what drew me to it.
And the other beautiful thing of the street music is it wasn't a bunch of, you know, a tight-knit group of people that wouldn't allow anybody else. You were invited as a musician to come in and sit in the corner and add what you could. And
yeah, it was accessible.
And yeah.
Yeah. And so it was just like...
Yeah, there was a lot of music.
Some of There's it was still... real informal. Some of it was an organized band. We made more money when it was an
Yeah,
band.
Well, if you appeared to be professional, then you did make more money.
Well, I think at the bar. By the time we got Fiddlesticks together, that's figured out all these street routines that we were talking about.
So, well, in 75, we started playing using the name Fiddlesticks. And Tim Armacost joined then. And then that next winter, 76, Sarah Campbell was started learning the old-timey guitar. She was a singer.
What happened was Sarah hurt her back. And she had to be bedridden for a long time, at least three weeks or more.
So
we went in and she was trapped. She had to learn. Chris and I taught her how to pick and strum the guitar, and Chris taught her how to frill the banjo.
I think Dave Shapiro gave her lessons in frilling too. She was a natural.
She was a very quick study. But initially she just didn't like it and she wanted to be a country western singer.
Yeah, so it was a natural. We all had good harmonies. All of us could build harmonies, so that was a natural.
Yeah.
So that was the beginning of us playing with Sarah and
cats going full speed all around them. Geraldine and Ruthie May, they'll be cruising Maine today in a world that's going full speed all around them.
Yeah, she wasn't with us when we toured with Burl Ives.
So. No, see, that was a whole nother, that was in 1976, 77. And that in 77, Fiddlesticks was Bob Tagney and Sarah. Unless Sarah was not there, and then it was Tim Armacost and Bob Tagney and the two of us. And we met up with Jim Messina somehow.
We had just gotten to the street, Sarah and Dave and Chris and I, in front of the City Hotel. And I went in the hotel to see who was in there, and I noticed there was a table full of celebrities in there, and it was Jim Messina and
Jan Wenner.
Yeah, the head of the Rolling Stone magazine, Jan Wenner, and a couple others. There was all important show business people, and I came out and it was
77. Probably.
I said, "Let's go in the bar and play a song first." Because I told them, and there were celebrities in it. So we went in and played a song and immediately bonded with these people, and they bought us drinks, and we became good friends with Jim Messina, and he invited us down to his ranch to record, all because of the street performance. That's how we met him. We met a lot of other celebrities, like, through him, like Jeff Bridges. And there was a lot of stories there, but they weren't. They were down south.
No high.
When the Fiddlesticks went down to Los Angeles. Here's another lost chapter. We went down to Los Angeles again, and we auditioned for the Gong Show the spring of '78, the winter of '78, and that's
yes.
We were down there almost the whole time.
That was fun. It was in a little Hollywood
Chuck
theater.
Chuck Norris.
Well, they advertised on TV for. Anybody could
with
audition.
Talent.
Yeah, for talent. And it was, they had a phone number, and we called it, and it was this address in Hollywood, and it was one of those little old theater down there. And we went down, it was just magical. We went in there, and they loved us, and so we got on the Gong Show.
That was Fiddlesticks with Sarah and you and me. And
not me.
Not, yeah.
Yeah,
and,
I wasn't there.
Dave,
it was just before I joined.
It was
Paul Lewis.
Paul Lewis.
Bass playing.
Yeah, that was the four of us.
Yeah.
Chris and Bob and Sarah and Paul. We did, every time I go to town, the boys keep kicking my dog around. And, of course,
Chuck Barris
just loved it. He just loved it. And
you didn't win.
No, we got 30 points, though, which was, we tied for the win.
Twice.
And then, but Chuck Barris said, oh, you guys got to come back. So they had a nighttime gong show. So we came back for the nighttime gong show, and we did the same song, the same thing. And Chuck Barris got his guitar out. He had an electric Gibson SG.
Wow.
And played along with us. I don't know why he liked us so much, but we got 30 points again, but again, it was a tie with someone else.
Something.
And 30 points was as much as you could win.
Uh-huh.
That was the tops. And so Chuck Barris says, I'm going to have a nighttime variety show, prime time variety show called the Rah-Rah Show. And he says, I'm going to take you guys and put you on that,
and
with
so
the Coasters and Hanny Youngman and Doug Kershaw and all these acts and Fiddlesticks.
Cool.
And so we did that show.
And then it was
and
all over.
After that show, then we went home to.
We came home to Sonora and.
We got a call from the network. NBC or whatever it was, and they said, the Beverly Hills Yacht Club saw you guys on the Gong Show, and they want to hire you for a party in Beverly Hills. So we went to this mansion in Beverly Hills, and I think they were, I guess we came across as, you know, as like Jed Clampett types over the TV, because that's what they wanted. But so we played at this Beverly Hills party.
Chip. Oh boy. Come on, fella. Billy goat dancing on a dead Frigidaire. Dragonfly dancing on a bare clothesline. What kind of dance was they doing? Well, they were waltzing. Come on, Chip.
The old dog wandered down the road.
The old dog. Hey, Chip. Get off that billy goat, dude. Dancing on a dead Frigidaire, dragonfly dancing in the air. Along come Lizard, get out of here, Chef.
The old dog wandered down the road.
Get that dog out of my wash.
Ah, Chef, don't do it in the yard. Hey, look, Chef, there's an old black truck with the wheels gone, rusting away like an old time song. Rusting away in the weeds and truck heaven.
The old dog wandered down the road.
The old dog.
What's wrong with you, fella? Ma, he's all flattened out. When I die, don't bury me. Just get old Shep to carry me. He'll waltz me away to dog heaven.
Sarah ran over him with the pickup truck.
The old dog slobbered on his road. The old dog wandered down the road. The old dog wandered down the road. The old dog wandered down the road.
In 1980, and Randy Sparks came into the Cole Music, which was now across from Cervantes at that point. And he came in, he had called a meeting of people, he was auditioning people for his band.
Right, for the new Christy Minstrels. But then it turned out he didn't own the name New Christy Minstrels anymore. He had sold it. So then it was going to be the Back Porch Majority. But it turned out he didn't own the Back Porch Majority name anymore either.
But he had been famous for Christy Minstrels.
Yeah, he started both of those bands. And he
wanted a band because he had booked a tour in Florida for 6 weeks or something.
And then it culminated in South Dakota. At the Corn Palace.
The Corn Palace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And by that time, we were playing with Burl Ives, too, because he had planned to record an album with Burl Ives. So he'd written a lot of songs. But that was the band, was Paul Lewis, Dave Cavanaugh. Richard Scholler was in it for a while, but he dropped out. And so it was me and Bob and Paul Lewis and
Molly
Dave
B.
Cavanaugh. There was a gal piano player from Stockton, Stephanie Badalana. That's the band that we went to Florida with. And Steve Levine came with us. Well, he flew there. We drove straight to... We were headed for New Orleans. We were driving this Buick with three seats in it.
Yeah, the Starship
and it was
Tuna.
Huge. We had four drivers, so we drove shifts of driving all the way across.
One guy was drinking, one guy was sleeping, one guy was navigating, and the other one was driving. And we just, when they got driver got tired, we all swapped.
Well, we had 6 hour shifts because I drove from midnight till 6.
Yeah, and you're the one who can't see at night.
You were my co-pilot. Well, I could see when there's headlights, but it was fine. But we did.
And then we ended up in New Orleans, and we had some time to kill, so we decided we'd play some street music in New Orleans, and that's where we met all the street musicians there, and we fit right in, or at least they said we did, and made enough money to rent the whole top floor of 905 Royal Street hotel when we in the first set that we played.
Next to the cornstalk fence.
Yeah, the cornstalk
fence. Which is supposedly the House of the Rising Sun.
House of the Rising Sun, yeah.
Yeah.
Welcome to The Diggins, a living folk music tradition, is a production of Motherlode Community Radio. Funding for this project was made possible by a grant from the California Arts Council. From the studios of KAADLP in Sonora, I'm your host, Dave Allen.
Florida, we did 30 gigs in 15 days.
Oh.
Yes.
And half of them on the West Coast and half of them on the East Coast.
And we had a limo and a driver.
Yeah, that's right.
A famous driver.
What's his name? Bobby Breen.
Yeah, Breen. Breen. Yeah.
He's on the Beatles Sgt. Pepper cover.
As a kid.
He's one of the people on that cover. As a kid,
so we,
he was
we
a
did.
Child star.
We
was our limo driver.
And the limo was taking us between, we'd play one retirement place, like the dinner hour or something,
yeah.
And they'd have it all set up. And we were the opening set for Molly B. She was a famous kid singer that sang I Saw Mama Kissing Santa Claus. But then Steve Levine was flown out to be her lead guitarist.
Right,
so
right.
He was there with us, too. We'd get in the car and go to another place.
We even did that three times.
Really?
Because we took one night off to drive from the West Coast to the East Coast.
Straight through the center.
And then, yeah, through a little town called Kissimmee.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, we figured that was about halfway, and Chris says, if you get to Kissimmee, you're half of the way there.
Halfway there, yeah. Randy Sparks thought that was pretty good.
I thought it was clever.
I was the only
the
girl
time.
In the car, so that was a
yeah.
If you get to Kissimmee, you're halfway there.
Yeah.
Halfway there. Yeah.
Well, so that was a cool
and then
thing.
We were in Fort Lauderdale at
spring break.
Man, talk about nuts.
Yeah. So we did that whole thing. It was wild because we were chauffeured along, and it was a whole real concert tour
with
Randy Sparks.
And I have to say one little aside. In Florida, they have drive-through liquor stores.
Yeah.
And we instruct our famous limo driver to pull into this liquor store, and we'd roll down the windows and order all kinds of liquor.
Yeah.
I don't remember what
Yeah, no, they'd make mixed drinks and hand them through the window.
For that.
Yeah.
It was a crazy time, but that was fun.
So that was the March of 1981. Played with Burl Ives on our way home from Florida, and we all made it home safe and sound. And after we quit playing with Randy Sparks so much, then the actual formulation of the Fiddlesticks that most people know of happened, which was with Dave Cavanaugh and Sarah Campbell and me and Bob, Cactus Bob, and Chris Prairie Flower. And then in the fall, they had the very first Strawberry Music Festival, and they knew we were the local hot band, which we were, and they wanted us to help publicize the festival. We even put on a fiddle contest and gave prizes were tickets to Strawberry.
Uh-huh.
And and then we were there at the very first Strawberry Festival.
Thank you. The first Strawberry Festival was held
at
Leland Meadows.
And Steve Levine was the MC. But Steve Levine was the first MC on the Strawberry Music Stage.
Well, we all attended and participated to a certain extent by playing on the hayride. But the second festival, the first Camp Mather festival was the second Strawberry Festival.
Right.
And by then, they had hired Fiddlesticks as the host band. And what is the host band?
I know, I was reading the contract, because I'm a contract reader, you know, and I was a little concerned that it says here, we will act as the host band. And I didn't know what that entailed, and so we asked Charlie and Dan, and they said, well, you know, we don't really know what that entails either, so don't worry about it. It'll all work out. And after the festival, we were praised for doing exactly what they wanted, just to be the host band.
We did
the beer workshop.
Yeah. Well, if I remember the first one in Leland Meadows, we got there early and we looked at all the campsites back in the hills, and there was one right at the front gate that was in the grassy area close to the stage, and we sat up there and we played our wild stuff, and we just made a name for ourselves doing that at the first one. So then that's how we got to be the host band, was because we were the locals too. We brought a lot of people up.
We at Camp Mather, the first Strawberry at Camp Mather, Fiddlesticks was the first band on stage.
Yep.
And it was
my wristband was 0001.
Wow.
It says Strawberry. I think I've got that somewhere.
Oh, wow, that's great. The very first wristband.
The very first wristband.
Of a worker wristband, probably. Yeah. Well, they gave us a cabin there that was right near Bathhouse C, and we had both ends of the cabin, but the front of the cabin facing the bathhouse was a perfect stage.
Yeah.
And it was like up 7 feet in the air, and we ended up having a lot of people. But I remember the very first festival, we didn't know what to do, so we would take our instruments around to different camps, and we'd go cross country and raid a camp and go, we're here to entertain you, we're the host band, and if you like us, give us beer, if you don't like us, give us beer and we'll go away.
Right.
But we just hit all these different camps, and we were crazy.
See, Dave had this wristband that said, free beer at any camp.
Yeah.
I don't know where he got that.
On the inside of it.
Yeah. Well, that's because there was a backstage wristband, and people would ask, how come you have two wristbands? And I'd turn it over, and it says, free beer at any camp.
We were just inventing it as we went, and we were there the first night. We just were the perfect party band.
Yeah, it was a good choice.
We were all wild and crazy. We had original material.
And
we had
to do that for 9 years or something.
Something like that. Well,
every festival for
Fiddlesticks kind of broke up in '87. That was the last one when it was the first fire happened in fall of '87, and at that point, Sarah had just decided to move on.
Yeah.
And
also the Twain Hart Arts Festival and the Sonora Christmas Craft Fair. That all came out of Columbia Musicians.
Yes.
Yeah.
The Sonora Christmas Craft Fair.
The Christmas Craft Fair started in '75, and Fiddlesticks was the first band.
Yeah.
And it was in one building, and it was Fiddlesticks and... Well, it was Richard Berlay had the concept, and he was a stained glass artist, and he wanted to have a festival for crafters to sell their crafts, but he made it a music festival, and it was a three-day Thanksgiving weekend. It started on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and it was a huge celebration. It started the Christmas parade in
it went for years.
Yeah.
Yeah. It just now, in 2019 was the last year they had it.
He brought a lot of different bands to that festival, but he also always had the local
Fiddlesticks and the local bands and Sourdough Slim and the Saddle Pals when Doodoo. We all were part of that family.
Yep.
We were driving in our bus across the California plain, headed for a gig when Muddy started to complain. So we stopped in this here bar, cause we were getting kinda dry, and we ordered up some beers. I guess you know the reason why. Doo-doo-wah has tried them all at one time or another, And if you don't believe us, just listen to us. Brother.
Brother.
Brother. We drink lots of beer, boys. We drink lots of beer, boys. It makes me feel so queer, boys. Let's bring us lots of cheer, boys. If you listen here, boys, we'll tell you about our beer. Oh, we drink Coors, Budweiser, Hams, and Olympia. Cans, bottles, anyway to get it in your own. Raw Heineken, Tuborg, Burgermeister, Lone Star, Pearl, Falstaff, Lucky Lager, Michelob, Miller, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck.
We drink lots of beer.
Oh, we drink Pabst, Blatt, Schlitz, Jack, Bush, Blitz, Beck, Solheim, Warren, Seckies, Doe, Seckies, Stray, Seckies, Doe, Seckies, Moosehead, Buckhorn, Elephant, Polygon, Anchor, Porter, Anchor, Steam, it's enough to make a scream. We drink lots of beer. Oh, we drink heavy beer, light beer, pale beer, stale beer, cold beer, warm beer, cold beer, draw beer, draft beer, keg beer, keg beer, beer, there beer, in my underwear, beer, lost beer, found beer, drop beer, we've had lots of beer. So we all slid off our bar stools, feeling really fine. And Ron went to the bathroom.
It's the water.
But he had to wait in line. So Buddy stumbles to the bar to get another beer, and along came Fiddlesticks, and they said, now listen here, if you're going to win a muckamack, can we hitch a ride? We said, sure,
if you take the wheel.
Cause we're too drunk to drive.
We drink lots of beer, boys. We drink lots of beer, boys. It makes us feel so queer, boys. Don't bring us lots of cheer, boys. If you listen here, boys, we'll tell you about our beer.
Everybody sing along. Oh, we drink Coors, Budweiser, Hams, and Olympia. Cans, bottles, any way to get it in. You Lone
Heineken, Tuborg, Burgermeister, Lone Star, Pearl, Falstaff, Lucky Lager, Michelob, Miller, Mickey Mouse, Donald Duck.
We drink lots of beer. Oh, we drink heavy beer, light beer, pale beer, stale beer, beer, cold beer, warm beer, cold beer, drop beer, draft beer, keg beer, 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 there, beer, in my underwear, beer, lost beer, found beer, dropped beer, ground beer, we've had lots of beer.
If you've got the time, we'll drink your beer.
I wanted to talk about the Doo-Doo-Wah Band.
Oh, yes.
Because Chris and I got in this band called Horse Opry some time later after Fiddlesticks. And Dave teamed up with Ron DeLacy and formed Doo-Doo-Wah.
Yeah.
And Chris and I played a lot in that band in the early...
Yeah, you were guest artists in
mm-hmm. the early days.
Well, we did a whole little tape called the Balam Rankum Band with Ron, right. And it was all about some of his original songs. But describe you guys.
Ron was a genius songwriter. He could take current events and put a humorous spin on it, and the audience never knew that I was registered Republican. They always knew he was a Democrat because he was a newspaper man, so he was definitely a flaming liberal. But you couldn't tell in our songs because he would poke fun at both sides,
everybody
equally, and so. So it didn't alienate us from either right or left because it was funny to both of them. And we had six albums out. We had a pretty good run of humor, but then Ron got cancer and
right.
Yeah. And then we were given the Sutter Creek Theater for one night. And,
yes.
And Ron DeLacy put together this show, he says, let's call it a Winter Nights Yow. And so it started out there one night, sold out, and then next year we did We did the Fallon House and the Sutter Creek Theater for a couple of nights each, and those all sold out. So it finally ended up like 11 years later, we were doing 13 shows and
from 10 cities. From Merced to Modesto and up to Quincy.
Yeah, and we did San Jose.
Yeah.
And Grass Valley.
Yeah,
so we put on these Yao shows, and they were essentially Columbia musicians.
Yes.
Showing off our stuff.
It was a Columbia thing.
It was totally street music worthy because it was all fast paced and the different people coming in.
But I have to say that Ron DeLacy was responsible for most of that whole format, and it's very hard to try to put together a bunch of people and get everybody on the same page.
Oh, yeah.
Ron did it very well. And I'm sorry, Ron, if I yelled at you one or two times. Bit about how we got into the movies.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's one thing I was. We definitely.
Jay Newington. Maybe he heard that they were going to do Back to the Future 3, and they were going to do it near Columbia, and they started building a set out there. And
a multi-million dollar set.
Yeah. Well, it was a major motion picture.
It was a movie set from way back because of the train station out there.
Right.
And it's off of 108, Highway 108, 120.
Yeah, but they built a lot
and
onto
the
it.
The Jamestown train came through there, but they built a huge town.
So Jay Newington got together all the Columbia music people and...
called Sourdough Slim.
Yeah.
We auditioned, as I recall.
Yeah, the producer came out and... down in Characters in Tuolumne City, and it was, I mean, of course we just, you know, knocked them dead, and they didn't audition any other bands for it. We were just like, you got the job, and we were on with ZZ Top and messing around during the
we were ZZ Top's backup.
Yeah.
Well, when we got hired, we didn't know that ZZ Top was even in the movie. We didn't know much about ZZ Top, really.
Yeah, but before ZZ Top got there, we would, be off in the edge playing music because most of it's boring in the music.
Yeah.
In the
hurry up and wait.
Yeah, just got to be here and got to just nothing to do. And we'd get yelled at all the time for making too much noise while they were filming. And then when ZZ Top got there, we did the same thing. We sat around the sides and jammed with them, and no one ever yelled at us
after that.
ZZ
Top got there.
I'll have to relate this incident that happened. One day, we were all on stage with ZZ Top. They were filming, and the camera broke down. This is how this happened. Yeah. The camera broke down, so there was a big break. With nothing to do, and so we had our actual instruments. ZZ Top had these, they were standing there, they were pretty much ignoring us. They had prop guitars, as I recall.
Yeah,
they did.
But we started playing legitimate music. And
they were shocked.
Dusty, the bass player, says, I know those old towns. I grew up in Texas. I play all that stuff.
Oh, of course they are.
And so they all three joined in, and we had a little mini concert. Do you remember this?
It was fun.
Yeah, Steven Spielberg.
It was based on our street Spielberg music. We were playing all, we were playing all the standards. And those good old Texas boys, they knew those songs. And we looked out there, and the whole cast and crew, we basically put on a concert for the cast and crew, including Steven Spielberg was there that day.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that went down in the history, in the lore of that movie. If you go on the website, they talk about that.
Though it was a pretty big amalgam of musicians, besides Sourdough Slim and Dave Cavanaugh and Bob and me, and Tom Wentworth, who was from the Possum Hollow guy. So it was a big thing. The scene we were in was a nighttime scene, so for a week or more, we had to go there at dusk and get all costumed up, and then we'd film until it was dark, until the sun came up.
Oh, well, I was in a movie with Tom Selleck and remember the Shadow Riders?
Shadow Riders, yeah. All the brothers.
Yeah.
The Columbia had a large movie history, and they would put dirt in the streets, and there was all kinds of great movies going on at that time.
Heaven Brides for Seven Brothers.
Oh, we were in that movie, too.
Yeah.
Seven Brides, but we did get involved in that, in Fiddlesticks. That was in the 80s. But just recently, we played as the Hill Valley Drifters, some people that have been doing a Back to the Future 3, doing it in Columbia and having a weekend long, and we've been hired for that.
They have a DeLorean time machine.
Yeah, they bring the.
And they've toured the whole world with it and trying to raise money for
Parkinson's
disease. All in the theme of Back to the Future 3, the Old West.
I am writing this song. Whoopie-tay-yi-yi, old movers, doggies along. Nightfall has come and I'm but half the way home. Whoopie-tay-yi-yi, old will keep moving along.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi,
a stream and a campfire.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi,
1,000 acres of stars.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi,
a trout on the fire and a sitting marsh. The sun's out as I strum my guitar. I've got a woman who don't know where I've gone.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi, old mover's doggies along.
She thinks I'm wrong, but I'm right where I belong.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi, old will keep moving along.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi, a stream and a campfire.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi,
1,000 acres of stars.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi,
a child on the fire, and I'll sit and watch the sunset as I strum my guitar. Last very long.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi, old movers, doggies along.
And my tobacco I will smoke till it's gone.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi, old leap a moving along.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi, a stream and a campfire.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi,
1,000 acres of stars.
Whoopie-tay-yi-yi,
a trout on the fire, and I'll sit and watch the sunset as I strum my guitar. I'll sit and watch the sunset as I strum my guitar.
So when we started playing there with Sarah and Dave in front of the barbershop.
Yeah.
And we came back with all these skills of playing in the street and skills that Randy Sparks had taught us of performance. It kind of took off there.
Yeah. Well, that was a magic place because between the two buildings, the sound would kind of stay there.
It was the center of town, and there were big shade trees.
But they cut down our tree.
Those were the good days of playing in the street.
I remember a time when Sean, the bagpipe player.
Sean Folsom.
Yeah, Sean Folsom.
But he brought the drummer from...
the Wipeout guy.
Yeah,
Wipeout.
Safaris. The famous drummer who did the famous drum solo in Wipeout.
They were both wearing kilts. and they were doing somersaults in their kilts and stuff like that. But they were doing wild stuff out
in
the street.
And it's true what Scotsmen don't wear under their...
I was trying to...
Yeah, he was a good drummer. He had a drummer around his neck. It was a... And he was
a little snare.
Playing along with it. It was a nice combination, the pipes and the drum.
Uh-huh.
And Slim Pickens would show up frequently.
Oh, he would ride his horse.
He lived in Columbia.
Yeah.
He would ride his horse down there,
as I recall.
Yeah.
One time, Michael Landon was up here a lot filming Little House on the Prairie, and he was supposed to be a fiddle player in that series. And one time, Chris and I were out playing in the street, and he brought one of the little girls.
Evelyn Melissa Gilbert, I think.
Yeah, over and watched us for a while, and then he put either a $10 or a $20 bill in there. A big bill for us.
And
that was a cool moment.
And then Kit the Car was there one time. You know, the Night Industries one with the red hood.
Did they,
lights, LEDs.
Yeah.
Did they
Night
time
Rider.
Travel or something?
I don't know. Night
How
Rider
did they end up
recorded
there?
There? And we could all look at the car. It was a beautiful car.
Yeah.
Well, I want to say some of my favorite memories are just being in Columbia and in the bars and the whole community of people. We just had so much of a bond, and
St. Charles Saloon,
the St. Charles in its heyday, and then we also have become the town marching band. We call ourselves the Armacost Memorial Marching Band, or the Columbia Irregulars. What we call ourselves, and there's a lot of pictures over the years of us, the Easter parade and the 4th of July and all the picnics, and there's just so many great memories of all the loving people.
Why don't we go to the town right now and take vicariously through the people who travel with it.
All you are is a dream and a memory.
They say he died of a broken heart, and his tomb is a lonely sea. And the very last words he was heard to say, I'm going to my Annabelle Lee.
Listening to Welcome to the Diggins, a living folk music tradition. Coming up,
that music and the party aspect of it became the center of a social scene. And it centered around Columbia because of the street music. And so the whole social awareness of Columbia and that whole time, that's how it started, around that of music, and it just grew from there.
Welcome to the Diggins, a living folk music tradition, is a production of Motherlode Community Radio. Funding for this project was made possible by a grant from the California Arts Council. From the studios of KAADLP in Sonora, I'm your host, Dave Allen. Thanks for listening.